Comedy Filmers, episode 477. Boom, 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 boom. We didn't have money for a theme song, so I wanted to put a big, big, loud, crazy theme song in there.
We've had our theme song for a long time.
That sort of action.
No, not the action news type of beat.
I can weigh in early. That was more like a judge, like kind of show. Dun dun dun.
Right. Yeah. It was.
And I'm on trial, I guess, today.
You are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So stand tall, the accused.
Mm-hmm. I'm defending myself. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
My sister went to law school.
Yeah.
Well, if that's
that counts for something.
That's got to be.
Yeah,
that's not a win right there.
As the brother of a Stetson grad, Your Honor, I think I know my way around the courtroom.
My sister went to law school.
And she only went because she loved Law and Order. She's like, this looks like fun.
Wow.
What would I rather be, a cop or a lawyer? I think I'll take the lawyer. Yeah. They get more air conditioning.
Because those are the only choices.
Yeah.
On television.
And then Law and Order, it's the back half of the episode is the law, so that's more of the fun.
Or you run a diner. That's it. That's all. Those are the only choices for jobs from TV.
I cannot judge yours. By the way, Mark Ellis is the one talking, ladies and gentlemen.
Good
our guest
to see you boys again.
Comedy Film Nerds, episode 477.
Yep. From many different film programs.
He has a litany of film programs.
Lots of different endeavors. I'm like Sherman going through Atlanta. I'm just burning movie outlets, schmoes, no collider, Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Yeah. I'll burn it all to the ground. Yeah.
You're burning film cans around TVs and making neckties.
Oh my God! Yeah, it's been fun. It's been a nice journey, and then I was like reconnecting with you all, Graham. We got to see each other in San Diego.
Yes, we did Doug Loves Movies. Mm-hmm. I believe our second year in a row doing it together.
Well, yeah, that's when it's really San Diego Comic Con at American Comedy Companies, where Graham and I realized that we actually are somewhat best friends. We just communicate like once every 9 months, and it happened to fall again, and now I'm here. So this was a great follow up by you. This is really elevating our relationship
really
to the next level.
I was
sounds like you doubled it.
Yeah, I did. I doubled it up. I was like, I can't wait another 12 months to see Mark.
Yeah.
So let's get him in. And I was like, you know, I have a movie review podcast that I do with Chris, maybe another guy that does a half a dozen movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I was, because that's part of it. We were scrambling. Well, let me just say this.
That's what the guest always loves to hear. If you're a young podcaster and you get a guest, you always want to hear, well, we were scrambling for a guest 5 minutes before. Luckily, Ellis was begging for change outside.
We got him off the scrap heap of podcast guests.
I think he sleeps in that Ford Fusion. There's a lot of cans in the backseat.
I don't judge his lifestyle choices. I just know he can talk movies. No, we were looking for guests. I'm sure you went through this. A guest falls out. You're looking for this, that, and the other thing. And so we were trying to get a guest last week, which ended up not happening. But, I talked to one comic who was like, oh, I haven't seen a movie in 8 months. And I was like, oh, God. And then I went, I know a guy that watches more movies than I do.
I can speak fairly intelligent about anything that's coming out still just because I'm enough in that world. But I really have taken a step back because our channel Schmoes Know, we rebranded the movie Trivia Schmodown because that's our trivia show and that's kind of what we're leaning into now. So now I was talking to my business partner, the husband of my wife, Christian, and I was like, I'm really this year and probably heretofore, I'm going to see the movies I want to see. And I'm not going to go see the movies I don't care about seeing. So I have seen less movies this year than in the last decade, and it feels great. I feel refreshed. I get more naps. I'm up to date on every team's training camp so far. But I have seen a couple recently that
we're
I would be
talk
excited
about.
To get into.
By the way, whenever a guest for this podcast ever says, I haven't seen a movie in 8 months, his next words should be, hello?
Yeah.
Hello? Yeah. He will not get another call.
Yeah. I got, and they're like, some comic said to us once, I never watch movies. I'd be a great guest because we could joke about that. I was like, that's
no,
a horrible
that's the
idea.
Opposite of
that's
great.
The dumbest thing I've ever heard. Have you ever seen that on a sports talk show? I don't like sports.
Yeah.
I'd be great on your sports talk show. No.
It's
what are you going to discuss?
Like one joke. It's like Gallagher smashing the watermelon at the beginning of his set.
Yeah. It's over.
That only is the closer.
Irony is not always entertaining.
Yeah.
And it can't go for an hour.
I know.
See, I didn't used to go to the theater a lot before I started getting into, you know, a lot of the press screenings. Mm-hmm. Because, like, in the early days of Schmoes, Christian and I would pay, like, every weekend to go see a movie. And then we would find a theater that was maybe a little permissive about sneaking into other theaters to see. So we'd pay for one movie and end up like walking out with a triple feature.
Right.
And then we got three vids we get to shoot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like we famously paid to see Prince of Persia and then wandered over to Sex and the City 2 and then watched as much as we could possibly stand of that movie.
By the way, neither movie deserved your money.
God, that sounds like the worst double bill I've ever heard in my life.
Right. Could I just buy $20 worth of popcorn and then not buy a ticket for either of these movies? Because I want to support the theater.
I'll sit in the dark
and
just eat popcorn and stare into the abyss rather than watch Prince of Persia and Sex of the City 2.
That was when we were hitting the pavement.
Wow,
when
you are
stare at Prince of Persia, Prince of Persia stares back into
you. Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
I took down a lot of Grove popcorn. We're both living over Fairfax and 3rd. That's still, for my money, the Grove popcorn, it's still my favorite popcorn. Mm-hmm. You can throw your fancy arc-like caramel popcorn. You come out of your ivory tower, leave your watermelon chicken sausage baguette behind. Come on over to Slum It at the Grove and enjoy the best corn you're going to have in Southern California.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, too, about the Grove. It is always, it's changed. It was a century, and now it's something else, or it was like a
Pacific Theaters now?
Was it? Yes.
Or maybe they changed it since then?
But it's always just been like...
Could be an AMC. None of us know.
Nobody knows at this point. It's a shadow. It's a shadow company.
Well, now you walk into the Grove, and because they have like two really nice theaters now, like the Dolby ones and then the other ones. Because you walk in, so basically, don't even look at what movie is playing. Look at the two movies that are playing in those theaters. And if you want to see those movies, great. Have yourself a ball. If it's playing in anything else, I may take my business elsewhere.
Yeah, those are the ones. You pay for the Dolby, and then you see your second feature in the...
Yeah.
In the tenement project ones of the other ones.
It's hard to go back. Once you have that good experience, I'm like, oh, this actually sounds fantastic.
And people are shutting up, or if they're talking, I can't hear them.
Right.
I don't notice a cell phone.
Because their mouth
theaters.
Is right next to a speaker, because there's 100 of them in the theater.
It's the best. The first time I was ever in a Dolby kind of setting like that was I saw the Metallica movie Through the Never. And I'm a big Metallica fan, and they played that movie, and I was sitting right next to a speaker, and I still probably have hearing problems, but man, was it worth it, because that thing just knocked my socks off. It was great to hear that music that loud in a movie theater equipped to handle it.
So, all right, ready to get into it?
Let's get into it.
Let's start with The Farewell.
Okay, so I saw the trailer for this last week, and I was like, I really want to see this. It's an indie film. It's based, so Lulu Wang is the director, and it's basically based on a real-life story of hers. So,
because it sounds a little like, oh, this sounds made up, but it's not. It's based on a true story.
It's completely a true story, and the thing that's really interesting about it is this is sort of... It's a big cultural thing. It wasn't just this one family did this. This is like kind of standard operating procedure in China. So what happens is...
Oh, I didn't know it was a cultural thing.
Oh, it's very much a cultural thing. And that's part of what the whole movie is. And I think Lulu Wang does a great job. So the lead character, which is based on Lulu Wang, is a Chinese-American woman. She's in her early 30s. Her parents emigrated here from China. So she speaks Mandarin. But it grew up in America. So she knows Chinese culture, but is very much an American and finds out, and this is all in the trailer. This is not a spoiler alert, that her grandmother's been diagnosed with lung cancer and she doesn't have much time to live. The family decides to not tell the grandmother. So her cousin, who's been dating a Japanese woman for about 3 months, they're like, he's having a wedding. So we're all going to go back to China to say goodbye. And it really, this movie has such a great sense of humor to it and some really wonderful heartfelt moments. Lulu Wang cast really good actors. The only one who's even kind of recognizable is the lead who plays her dad. He's the guy who kind of looks like the president of China, so he always is cast in that part. Like, he's like, I hope this guy never leaves because I'm always going to, you know, it's like, you know. It's like if you were like on SNL and you had the one good presidential.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like,
yeah, he's always got that suit ready for any audition.
Any audition. And he shows up to play the president of China and kind of looks like him. And but that was also interesting, too. You see that guy's range as an actor. You hear his American accent. He's the woman who plays her mom does a great job. And you really see the difference of the two cultures. And I think that's what Lulu Wang really wanted to convey. And I think she did a great job.
Do you think the comparisons to like Crazy Rich Asians is fair, or should this be treated as more like, you know, I know it had one of the same stars, but shouldn't it be treated like on its own, or is there some similarities?
It's the Crazy Rich Asians is like a big wacky rom-com.
Mm-hmm.
This is an indie, this is like a heartfelt indie movie.
Okay.
That has, you know, it's like a Chinese Garden State or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
That seems like the more fair comparison to me, because obviously you're going to get the Crazy Rich Asians in this because a lot of white people are watching the movies.
Yes,
right. It's like, oh, right, they have Asians in movies now.
Yeah.
When you really break down the bare bones of it, it is Awkwafina's in both movies, and she is a very different Awkwafina in The Farewell than she is in Crazy Rich Asians. And she's really funny. Like, I really enjoy her sense of humor in movies like Crazy Rich Asians. But here, you're right, she does not lose the funny, but that dramatic side comes out in such a deep, compelling way. And so from the guise of, oh, we're going back for a wedding, then I can see the comparison to a Crazy Rich Asians. But there's so many more layers to this, both that the trailer will reveal about the grandma dying, and then other things that you're really going to be surprised with emotionally once you actually see the movie.
I think that's a great way to put it, Mark. The comparisons to Crazy Rich Asians are very on the one that's the first paragraph, and then everything else is very different. And it is really... It has that indie film heart to it, you know, and because there's not a lot. I mean, I'm sure some of these actors are big names in China and they got Chinese financing and everything like that. So I'm sure it's doing well over there. And that's great. But there's scenes I laughed out loud, and I saw it down at the Del Amo Fashion Mall. And half the audience was probably Asian. And so there was big laughs. You know, there was a lot of like, this is a typical Chinese family.
Like it was like when Greek people laughed at My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Mm-hmm. Like those inside cultural
jokes. Inside cultural jokes for sure. But I didn't feel like I left out or didn't get it.
That's the mark of a great film.
Right?
Like it doesn't like, oh, you never get the feeling, oh, this movie isn't for me.
That's a good pull because, My Big Fat Greek Wedding did the same thing for my family, who is clearly not Greek because we go to the beach and we wear hazmat suits. I mean, when you watch a movie like that, it's like, yeah, you clearly know that there's cultural things that you did not grow up necessarily with, but it does a good enough job of making them evident without hitting you over the head.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's why I think The Farewell, not only is it great storytelling, and Lulu Wang, what a fantastic directorial job.
So good.
I think that this is one of those movies that comes out at the right time, and when you have a movie this small, you're not sure where it's going to go, who's going to respond to it, but it starts to get that groundswell of fan support to where it's positioned to have a studio come in and say, you know what, we are going to put $5, $10 million into this award campaign because we think there's that many good performances in front of and behind the camera to make The Farewell a player come Oscar time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really, and I'm going to read you some stuff here. So American producers objected to the all-Asian cast and insisted that she needed to add a prominent white character.
That doesn't sound like producers at all.
No, Hollywood is not racist at all. But Chinese financiers thought the story was too American, which is funny, their point of view of this. And they also insisted on adding white characters, which is interesting. So,
I wonder if that's a typo. they always do American, but they want to still add more white characters.
Just for like, background.
Yeah, I'm like, these sound like you want it both ways now, Chinese producers.
it's interesting because that's such a, and that shows, and that's that is the through line of the whole movie. And it's not surprising that even from a financier standpoint, there was the two different cultures. There's a scene in the movie where the whole family's together and they're arguing, you know, her parents, the lead character's parents, are arguing why moving to America was, there's an argument. They just put the argument, which is better, China or America? And they put it out there between this family. And one's like, oh, well, you think China's so much better? You're still sending your kids to an American school.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and it's like, well, you left China and you tell me America's so great. And there's, you know, and it's just like, it was really interesting. And I only like a first generation Chinese American director could show these two sides of this, you know.
It sounds like it kind of had the insight of like a Better Luck Tomorrow, like Justin Lin's first movie.
A little bit. Yeah. It's really, excuse me. I loved it. I mean, I laughed, I cried. It was a really wonderful. And I also heard an interview with Lulu Wang on NPR a week or two ago, which is one of the reasons I was like, ooh, I want to watch this film. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of revealed too. Like, she learned about her grandmother, and her grandmother was a soldier in the Chinese army, you know, like, and she's just like, I didn't know this about my grandmother. And the grandmother is so, it's so well written, but you can tell it's based on a real type person. And the thing I think that why it resonates, you don't have to be Chinese because it's this grandmother of a different era that talks, you know, you need to lose weight so you can get a husband. Like, everyone has a grandmother that says shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, you know, my grandma, I would always smile in pictures when I was a kid and make funny faces. And my grandmother gets so mad, you know, and she would just, you know, say that older generational, like, my great grandmother told my mom when my mom was a little girl, Irish and Italian blood doesn't mix. Right. So, and she was like off the boat Irish, you know, and so she had whiskey from
because of the heat, the temperature of blood.
The heat of the two bloods don't mix. And just so there's stuff like that while I didn't relate to the specifics, I'm not Asian, obviously, but just that, like, grandmother, straight talking grandmother, like, everyone has that in every culture.
That's a relatable thing that's universal. Mm. And I'm glad that your great grandmother was such a fan of Gangs of New York, because she's really don't mix at all. And but you're right. I mean, I had the same, I like when movies make me run the gamut of emotions, because and what's really tricky for a movie to do is get me to care about the characters that necessarily I am not in that stage of my life. Like, as because we were talking off air, where it's like, you're just like, well, you don't have a family. And I'm like, no, I don't. I mean, I got, you know, I got my brother, my sister, and I got my mom and some extended family, which is great. But, like, I don't have any intention of starting a family. Mm-hmm. I don't care about any of that stuff. And it's like when you see a movie that's really good where somebody's raising a child, and I care about that kid for 2 hours. I'm not going to care about that kid in my real life. But it made me think, oh, I could be this person. It opened up a new little gateway to my soul, which is something that I really appreciate. When
good art does that,
pay to see a movie.
It does, like, there's a funny scene in there where, you know, her cousin is marrying a Japanese woman and she never speaks.
Right.
So there's a scene and the grandmother's like, oh, she's so dumb. And she goes, Grandma, she's not dumb. She just doesn't speak Chinese. Right. Which I'm like, laugh, because that's universal. Mm-hmm. Oh, this guy's dumb. He doesn't speak English. No, he's got a PhD. He just,
just hasn't learned the language.
He's just learned this language. You don't speak his language.
No. He just keeps talking to me in this other language. Yeah. Oh,
shut up. You know? And it's just so funny. It's such, that's what makes it relatable. That's a human nature thing. Mm-hmm. You know, is the grandmother racist? No, she just comes from and she came from the era where China and Japan
didn't get along.
Nah, they had a couple of dust ups.
Yeah.
So it's like,
there's a couple of practices. There's a couple of scrimmages
a couple of times, you know, and, you know, so it was really, and you didn't need any white people in it. If that was the true story, if Lulu Wang is like married to a white dude and he came over there and we got to see, if that's what happened, great. But I'm glad they didn't shoehorn in because of American producers or Chinese financiers said, nope. I'm glad this just showed me the story, what life was like. I've been to China twice. It made me really want to go back there because there's so much stuff about the culture that's so different. I remember meeting some Chinese comics. Two female comics grew up in China in Shanghai. And I was like, so what does your family think about doing stand-up? They're like, I would never. My family has no idea I'm doing this.
Wow.
I was like, what? They're like, no. Standing on stage talking, especially as a woman, no way. Mm-hmm. And so that whole culture of don't say anything, don't. And the whole thing of, like, there's a great scene in there. And this is in the trailer too, where her uncle goes, see, that's the difference. In the West, you think your life is all yours and you're an individual. Here, it's our duty to not burden our mother with this news of her not being able to live for the next 6 months. Mm-hmm. You think guilt, that's your selfish Western thing. You're a Westerner. Oh, my guilt. I feel guilty for not telling her. You don't realize your duty as the whole family. And I was like, wow, it was really cool to see and hear that and showed like what the two cultures were. It was really, mm-hmm. It's a great movie, and I can't recommend it enough, especially as we, and I'm sure you know, you see this, Mark, you just talked about everything is a superhero movie or a sequel or a remake or a big budget thing. So when a nice little human indie story like this comes along, go see it. Go see it in the theater.
Right.
Vote with your dollar. Support a good filmmaker. Lulu Wang is a good filmmaker.
And I am the worst offender when it comes to the sequels and the big
blockbusters. Sure, of course.
Because I see...
Some of them are fun.
I see a comic book movie, and as soon as the movie's over, I'm like, all right, what movie is selling me next in the post-credits scene? But yeah, with this, you really do get... You get the fact that this is a family, an individual family that does have its own quirks and mannerisms, but... There's also cultural things that are not specific to this family that are specific to the culture. Like you said, the way that you would view something like death is very different. And I just think it does a fantastic job. So I would be shocked. I mean, we as audiences would be treated to 10 movies the rest of this year that come out that are better than this, that would force this to not get an Oscar nomination for Best Picture, because I really think that this is, as of right now, I would consider this a front runner for all the awards. And I know we're just getting into award season in September, but I think this is the one, because we see it more recently in the last few award season cycles, where there are more movies that people consider that have come out earlier in the year that are not just lumped into that late September through early December kind of window. And I think The Farewell could be one of them.
Well, you got to put Best Screenplay in there. You got to put Best Director. You got to put Best Picture. I would even put Best Actress. And you know what? Here's the thing, too. We talk about the Oscars every year.
It wasn't based on a book or anything, right? It was an original screenplay.
It's her life. This happened to Lulu Wang and her family. So it's really her. But like, you know, we've talked about diversity at the Oscars. And one of the things that always gets left beside is an Asian woman hasn't been nominated in 50 years for Best Actor, Best Actress.
She had to write her own story.
Yeah,
for that for that to get made. Right. Yeah.
So it's like this is a really good film that needs to be recognized, and this is an opportunity where the Oscars and the Golden Globes can give a good movie and a good young filmmaker and Asian woman and like female director. This is the movie that should really get all of that and more, because it's wonderful storytelling. It was just a great film, so check it out.
All right. I saw Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark with my with my family, and this was quite an adventure. So I am going to go through everything that happened up to and during this film that we watched. But first, I want to make it. There's an interesting parallel here between The Farewell. Farewell, they had trouble getting financing for this film. But then when they went on This American Life and Chris Weitz came on as a producer, he was able to get the rest of the financing. Now, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is based on some young adult books from the 80s. Been in development for years. Guillermo del Toro becomes involved.
There you go.
Then it gets made. So each of these movies, in an interesting way, completely different, but needed a champion to get made. So I wasn't sure about this film. It's rated PG-13. And I thought, well, is it going to be really scary? Is it going to be kind of horrifying? Is it going to be like, or is it going to be like a Goosebumps? I wasn't sure. Check the IMDb Parents Guide. It was like moderate. Okay, that's not too bad. No blood and gore, because if it's PG-13, the first thing that cut out is not the violence, but the blood and the gore, so it's less red and less intestines or whatever, viscera, I guess you could say. So, but I still wasn't convinced. I'm like, my son wanted to see it. He's 11. My daughter, of course, wanted to see it. She was 14. And my wife wanted to see it. So I'm like, I don't know. Let me do a little more research, because Neil hadn't seen it yet. So normally I ask Neil. And I went into some filmmaker interviews. And they said that, well, this is a movie for kids who were too old for Goosebumps but too young for It. And I'm like, oh, that's perfect. That's like a house with a clock in its walls. It's like right that mid-range.
And those are the ages of your two children.
Yeah, the age of the – yeah, it was perfect. So and then it said, yeah, it's a little scary, but we put a safety bar in there. And then I'm like, okay, well, now this made me want to – I felt better about bringing my 11-year-old. This movie was fucking horrifying.
That was the best lead up.
Right. I did my due diligence.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
It's almost like an admission. I'm sorry.
My God. I got it right for 14 years. This one I got it wrong on. Unbelievable.
He was describing a Jurassic Park Jeep. He's like, we got the Jeep. It's a very safe automobile. There's a roll bar. And oh my God, there is a goddamn T-Rex. Yeah.
Yeah, there is no way this movie should have been PG-13. This was more frightening and terrifying and disturbing than It in parts. It was, this movie was off the rails. There was no safety bar on this movie. My son didn't make it all the way through. About 45 minutes in, my wife had to take him out. My daughter was freaked out over it, and she's watched a ton of horror. And all of us had trouble sleeping that night.
Just the whole family in one bed together.
I'm so bummed out.
Wonder what's coming out of the closet.
And it was the kind of thing where had I known, you know, I would have just taken my daughter and we would have enjoyed it because it's a good horror film because it's fucking terrifying. But it is not marketed properly at all. I would not take anybody under 14 to see this movie. And the reason is because this movie taps into like old school psychological horror. Like, you know, everyone nowadays, they're so used to like, slasher, visceral, you know, everything blowing up or zombies. So it's everything's disgusting. With this, you know, and it goes back to these, because these books were written in the 80s, it's being trapped in the basement of a haunted house where someone was tortured. Shit like that. Like, and then...
That's not for kids.
No, it is
not. I'm not going to that movie.
No. Being trapped in a hospital with this horrifying monster closing in on you where there's no place to run. There's this monster that comes through a chimney in pieces and puts himself together and does the spider walk from The Exorcist for 20 minutes.
Oh. It's the Del Toro influence, man.
It is.
Really, and I'm not, because Andre Overdahl, the director, has done some really cool horror stuff. Yes,
but
who
was looking over his shoulder the entire time?
Well, it was Del Toro, but the other horror, like he did the Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Yes.
Andre Overdahl did, which is an R-rated film.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And he also did the cult favorite Troll Hunter back in 2010.
Yeah, which I liked too, and I would let both kids see Troll Hunter.
And right, but then you get the combination, and I was, the screening that I was fortunate enough to go to was introduced by Andre and Guillermo was there.
Right.
And they mentioned as much as what you said, that they said that they feel like they made a film that is a nice gateway into horror films for kids. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the scares after the movie. I didn't get the frights afterwards. I wasn't like, because I live by myself by choice. And I didn't feel terrified. But during the film, I'm thinking there's a lot of graphic stuff. It's the graphicness of what is depicted that really got me like, this is PG-13?
Yeah, it was really incredibly disturbing stuff. And one of the things too, and this is why the rating system is so fucked up. All right, if you show a head getting blown off and you know, blood coming out, it's an R. But if you're listening to a recording of someone getting slowly tortured and murdered from shock therapy, that's not R. That's like ridiculous. That's PG-13? Really? This is the gateway horror for children? Are you sure? So it was the kind of thing, but also it was so disturbing, and the way it was shot really well for a horror movie, because they did all of those things that they know that you know, like the sound, the music goes out, you know there's a jump scare coming. But they delay it over and over and over again, so it increases the tension where you're almost like this as you're watching, and then when you finally it shows up, it's even more horrifying than you think it's going to be. So it was a really good horror movie marketed horribly.
So the beginning, when you're set up to telling us all of this, Chris, fair enough to say that it's an apology to your family?
Yes, pretty much, yeah.
You're listening.
Dad did his best, kids. I'm sorry.
Like I said, got it right for 14 years. I was due for a miss. This was a pretty hard one, but I did miss.
It seriously was. Like I imagine if you're either one of your kids' age, it's like back when I was a kid, you know, the gold standard of like, oh, man, I want to see a woman naked, find a Playboy, find a penthouse, something like that. And you never could get your hands on one back in Williamsburg, Virginia. I couldn't find anything. This movie, it's like getting the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue, opening up, and there's a Playboy inside, and there's somebody spread eagle, and you're like, Jesus, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
I was expecting a bikini or two. I wasn't expecting just a full ass. Look at this thing.
Did you like the movie, though, Mark? Just overall in terms of...
I thought it was okay. I thought it was, as far as me enjoying it, because I'm a big horror movie fan as well, and so I did read the books. These are like the only books I've ever read, but that don't involve, unless it involves Van Halen or Tiger Woods, I haven't read the book. But I did read all the Scary Stories.
A lot of Van Halen books out
big. If I see a Van Halen bio, I am picking it up out of habit.
Mark reads a lot of Van Halen fan fiction.
I write a lot of Van Halen.
Yeah.
So then the alien said, we're going to take over your planet. But then Eddie started hitting those notes. Yes. And an eruption of lava came out of his guitar. But yeah,
running with the devil, chased away the zombie fleet.
Gives me a good idea is that they find out David Lee Roth's an alien, so they hire Sammy Hagar to go kill him, and then they have like the whole rivalry.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I thought that it was the stories that they were telling, I thought would be a good gateway for somebody, a younger viewer, into a more R-rated horror fare. But you're right, the amount that they showed, like you referenced the jump scares.
Yeah.
The jump scares are really well done, but I'm just not expecting, once the scare is revealed, to be on camera for that long.
Right.
And in your face. And so I fully agree with that.
It didn't let up. I mean, this movie literally didn't let up for the entire thing. And one of the things that was also very deceiving is that we're getting accustomed to seeing things like Stranger Things and It, where you've got a group of kids.
Right,
and
right.
It's almost like a Scooby-Doo gang that's like they're fighting monsters.
Sure.
But you think, and you see the way they interact with each other, oh, they're going to be around for the entire show, or they're going to be around for the entire movie. And then even in It, they get older and they come back. This movie, you end up with considerably less children than you start
with. Spoiler alert. Well, let me ask you this, Chris. So now, taking away the fact you felt like it wasn't marketed correctly and you're in the theater going, oh my God, I've traumatized my son and I'm blaming myself.
Yeah.
Letting go of all of that, as a movie, how did you think of it?
As a horror movie, I thought it was really well done as far as like putting together scares and disturbing imagery and unsettling me. Now, the story was a little thin because it was Goosebumps, because you have all these young adult books and each one was a different story. Mm-hmm. So you have the through line of like someone who died and was writing these stories. They came to life and they were killing people one by one. So if you get past kind of like the thin thread of the story and you get into the actual horror, it was really effective.
Okay.
It was really scary.
Okay.
And it was this kind of thing that I would also recommend seeing in the theater with good sound, because the sound was really important to this movie. Everything from, you know, the creepy sounds that would happen behind you, but the way they played with the volume of like the quiet and then someone screaming and then quiet. I mean, it was really effective. And I give, you know, the director a lot of credit for that. I mean, the way he created a mood and the jump scares and everything else. I mean, you know, the kids are quippy and they try to be funny in the beginning, but once things start going, no one's joking anymore. Then it goes... and it has a good build. It gets more and more horrific as it goes on, and it doesn't let up till the end. So, if you're a horror fan, check it out, and don't bring children with you.
Okay.
And it's got the best zit-popping scene since Animal House.
And that's what freaked out my daughter. That's what made her unsettled.
Hey, we've all been there. We've all been looking in the mirror, being like, this thing is ready to go.
And that's in the trailer. There's it, and then all of a sudden, a little spider leg comes out of the pickle in the on her cheek.
I mean, isn't the white goo bad enough?
Yeah,
I don't ever want to see this movie.
Yeah. And
I'm
the
never
one thing,
gonna see this movie, not on a plane.
No.
I'm flying to Russia in September. I'm not. If this is on the plane, I'm not watching it.
Do not watch this on your trip.
I will say this: that this was an interesting choice. They set the movie in the '60s. So, because everyone's trying to put, you know, the horror with the kids in a different time frame for some reason, but it's like, oh, we can't do the '80s now, we can't do the '90s. Sorry, all right, we'll do the '60s. But
these kids can't have cell phones.
Yeah,
damn it.
That's what we're going for. But it was one of those things where it felt like a an arbitrary decision because, all right, '60s, '60s clothes, '60s cars. But nobody's really going to speak like they're in the '60s. We're still going to speak like we're in the contemporary times, but we'll be in '60s clothes. So that was not a huge attention to detail there. But I'll say it was a scary movie, and it, like I said, it was because it was more psychological and jump scary than anything bloody or gory.
Okay.
Yeah, don't watch it on a trip to Russia. Russia's haunted enough. Here in Russia, there's a lot of dead women looking for parts of their body.
Yes.
So you don't need this movie to usher you into any other area.
Well, I'm staying in Chernobyl because I'm told that the hotels are cheap there. So
you should be fine.
Okay, good.
Good deal on Priceline.com.
Yeah, really good.
Slashing prices.
You know, I heard some complaints about the service, but you should be okay there.
No, if you go, just go to Airbnb Chernobyl. It's fantastic. I mean, I got a whole house to myself. It's fantastic.
Oh, really? The family's not still staying in there?
No, I got the run of the place. It's
good
weird.
For you.
Yeah. They say I shouldn't use the pool, but I don't know. It'll be fine. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
What's the worst that could happen? Yeah.
Plenty of power. Can charge all my devices.
Oh, yeah, without even plugging them in.
Yeah, yeah.
Put them out on the counter. They're going to charge themselves. It's messed.
Yeah. So Mark, you got to see a preview screening of Good Boys.
I did.
And what did you think of this movie? Now, this is kind of like, I felt like this is like, oh, all right, every couple of years somebody has to make a Porky's. And this really feels like it.
This really is. And I actually mentioned as much when Chris and I were doing our review for our channel this morning is that I feel like Porky's set a precedent because there were raunchy teen comedies before Porky's. But Porky's, when it came out in, I believe, 80 or 81, it was, we are a group of high schoolers and we need to get laid. That's the mission.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then you had American Pie and it was pretty much the same thing. We got to get laid at prom. Mm-hmm. And then you had Superbad. Which is, this is by the same producers as Superbad. And Superbad was, we're in high school. We know we're not getting laid. We're not quite there yet. We need to bring alcohol to a party so girls will think we're cool. Okay.
Right.
This is sixth graders, and the goal, the mission is to get that first kiss. But there's a lot of misadventures that happen along the way. Mm-hmm. This is a hard R movie. These misadventures are hilarious. The three kids, our leads, are fantastic in it. And it made me remember just how dumb and immature I was in sixth grade, because the big fear of this movie is, are these kids going to be so smart-mouthed, and are they going to be a little too aware of everything because it was written by adults? And no, these kids are in sixth grade. They don't know a lot, and they don't know enough to know what they don't know.
Right.
And it is such a fun, rollicking adventure where I don't think it's necessarily a perfectly made movie, but God, are there some funny parts in it.
That's mm-hmm. It describes so many great comedies. Is,
yeah.
You know, it's a bunch of set pieces with a thin thin line to connect them. And like, if the set pieces are funny enough, it's...
You forgive it.
You forgive it. It's like we talk about, it's like an action movie.
The Marx Brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me the plot lines. Right. Then, give me the 3X arc.
Of Duck Soup.
Of Duck Soup. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you know, and they all have a thin, you know, Animal House, whatever. They got kicked out of campus. They had to fight to get whatever. Like, there's always some Save the Teen Center thing.
Right. Yeah. When you talk about Animal House, you never mention, like, oh, well, Delta Tau Chi is fighting to stay on campus.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you talk about that part. Or you talk about that part.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Or you talk about that hilarious scene. It's the same thing here. I mean, I can think of 3-4 instances in the movie, in The Good Boys, that just it made me laugh in such a visceral, I've been there before way. Mm-hmm. So this, you know, for me, growing up here in the States in a suburb like these kids did, this is not something that, like, oh, I can imagine somebody going through that. I went through the exact same kind of sequence. Like, I joked on Twitter this morning that if you see The Good Boys and you don't think this is accurate to how sixth graders behave, when I was in sixth grade, one of the kids brought a condom to school, and I thought it was like a animal balloon thing. And I wasn't the only one. We all were like, what balloon animal are you going to make? And then it's like, oh no, this is actually used for something. And then we thought it was the coolest thing ever.
We got a condom, guys.
Yeah. And right. Then you made a balloon animal.
What are we going to do with it? Then we ended up making a balloon animal. Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, we'll watch the trailer in a little bit. Yeah.
Yes.
Gene Stupinski directed it. This is first feature. He did a few episodes of The Office.
Oh, okay.
He knows his way around comedy, around set pieces, like you said, and Evan Goldberg, Seth Rogen producing, and their touch is clearly on the movie, and it's just, it really is a good time. It's hard to get me to see a movie about kids, but man, I was in there, and I was enjoying every second of it.
Yep. All right.
All right. So check out Good Boys. And we have some Patreon sponsors, Graham.
Go to patreon.com/comedyfilmnerds, and you too can have your business spoken of in the way Chris is about to right now.
All right. Get ready.
You like that lead-in?
It was pretty good. Johnny Rulon is promoting his novel Green Cheek, A Junkie's Guide to Street Magic. It's on Amazon, both digital and hard copy. It's an experimental stream-of-consciousness novel which follows the exploits of the muse Calliope and her mortal lover T.S. on a journey through time, dreams, and the hidden places of a supernatural America. The website is happyhorrorshowproductions.com, happyhorrorshowproductions.com. And Fanboy Planet, it's a website and podcast for all things geeky and amazing. Check out Fanboy Planet for your comic news, your movie news, TV news, and amazing interviews with industry insiders and artists. Check out fanboyplanet.com, fanboyplanet.com. And from Chris Parker Howard, Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. New episodes every Friday wherever podcasts are found. Find out more at coffeeoversuicide.com. That's coffeeoversuicide.com. And Alice Frazier, co-host of the Bugle podcast and host of Tea with Alice, brings you a series of three genre-bending solo stand-up shows that explore the boundary between comedy and tragedy. The shows were recorded back-to-back as a three-hour show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival with a binaural microphone, which creates an intensely immersive listening experience. Check out alicefraser.com, alicefraser.com with an S. And the Art Podcast with Rebecca Evans. When we move past hesitation, we're true to ourselves, we find our own art in life. New episode with John S. Drew, host of the Shazam, Isis Podcast, Batcave Podcast, and more. TheArtPodcasts.com with an S. And a gritty Australian noir book, The Murder of Jeremy Brooks, pits small-town Australian PI Dan McGuinness against corporate greed and corruption. A Sydney surgeon hires Dan to find her husband's killer. The cop thinks it was a mugging gone bad, but she thinks it was a hit. More info at TonyMcFadden.net/JB. TonyMcFadden.net/JB. All right.
I got some talented fans.
I know. Yes. These people, you guys are doing great stuff.
They create.
Just admiring your logo, too, the Comedy Film Nerds logo. It looks like a Van Halen cover.
Oh.
It really, it's job well that done, boys.
Thank you.
I did not know you could turn into eagles, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris and I possess that ability.
Yes. It's not something we talk about.
No.
I was going to say, your trip to Russia is going to be very.
I know. We want to add a shapeshifter tier to Patreon, but we just haven't figured out how to like get it done yet.
We'll turn into whatever animal you want.
Yeah.
And on a lower Patreon tier, Mark will come in and make balloon animals out of condoms.
Yeah.
So we're going to add those two tiers next month. All right, now you just talked about Good Boys. Let's look at the trailer.
Okay. I can't believe it's the kid from The Room.
Whoops.
Mm-hmm. You guys cannot watch the trailer for your own movie.
And Seth Rogen.
Are you kidding? Are you kidding?
It's just too messed up for kids your age. There's drugs, there's violence, there's swearing. And although we've decided it's okay for you to do these things in the movie, you can't watch yourselves do them in the trailer.
That's fucked up.
Oh, it is fucked up.
Yeah.
You can say that, but you can't watch yourself say that. That's fucked up. Welcome to Hollywood.
I found all these weapons in my parents' closet. I think your parents will let me wear this for Halloween.
A knobby?
It's Japanese for nunchucks, motherfucker. Oh, fuck. Are you okay? You smell like shit.
Of course, there's going to be an anal beads reference in a Red Band trailer.
Yeah, can Thor and Lucas come? They're my best friends. We do everything together. You're so random. 2 weeks into sixth grade, I'm already a social piranha.
Sippy cup.
Piranha.
Sippy cup.
Does this look like a sippy cup? No, it's a fucking juice box. Because I'm not a fucking child. You do not want to go to Soren's party not knowing how to kiss. We could spy on my neighbor. She's a total nymphomaniac.
Hey, Stranger Things, go fuck yourself!
I need to get a closer look.
What the fuck?
This is what happens when you don't respect women.
I respect women. My mom's my best friend.
What about me?
My dad's gonna kill me. Chill. This is how we get the drone back.
Picture this. I'm a bag of dicks.
You took my bag?
Don't get any closer!
Oh my God, there's Molly in there.
Okay, who's Molly? Because she's not with us.
Jesus Christ.
You had us bring drugs to a fucking playground? Nobody speak, nobody get choked. We're not crossing a highway.
Are we fifth graders or are we sixth graders?
I'm a crack, I ain't lying, kick a lion in this crack.
Here's the plan. I'm gonna go to the party with a beer so everyone knows that I'm cool.
What do you have in your pants?
My penis?
Pull it out.
I also have a big dick.
Nobody speak, nobody can't
choke.
Nobody speak.
You're not getting these drugs.
I'm
fine.
You're
right.
Oh, hell no.
Hey, you let us run around with drugs, fight with frat guys. Nobody speak, nobody can't choke. It's like a cop in a convenience store. With what I know this thing is a dildo.
We're bad. We're so bad. We're bad.
When you see real people kissing, I have an idea.
Oh, yeah. How many husbands does she have?
Get out of there, girl!
Nobody even kissed.
Well, not in their mouths, at least.
It's a good, it's a great indication for what the movie is, but it's also a good comedy trope because it does not give away all the funniest parts.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Seth Rogen and even Evan Goldberg, they had something to say about the trailer.
I saw that trailer ahead of a movie I saw in the theater recently, and I was like laughed out loud during it, but I'm hypercritical and very suspect of a comedy movie. Like, is it going to be good? So hearing you say that it actually does all the things that the trailer leads you to believe is like, all right, I'm in.
Yeah, yeah. I want to see it now.
It's the best thing about a comedy trailer is when it knows it's a funny movie, and so it holds some of its cards to its vest. It shows you what the movie is. It gives you a, unlike Scary Stories Tell the Dark, indication of what the movie is, but there's some really funny things that will genuinely surprise you in the movie.
So. All right.
Yeah, after seeing that trailer, I know exactly what to expect for that movie. Right.
That I will watch on a plane. All right, here we go.
Make sure there's no kids sitting next to you. I always get very uncomfortable if I'm watching a R-rated flick on a plane.
That's fair. And consider it, by the
way. I don't want to. Well, it's not for them. It's for me.
Yeah.
It's my own comfort level.
Now, this is the Addams Family animated movie. I will say this. It seems like it's actually was a good property to make an animated movie on.
Lovely morning.
Because even kids aren't going to know what this is, but
children.
It'll be entertaining enough that like they don't they
love,
to have seen
kids
it.
Love Hotel Transylvania.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it makes sense.
I'm awake.
It makes a lot more sense than doing another live action one, for sure.
Darling, is that really as tight as you can make it?
Hello.
Wednesday. What do you have there?
I'm not sure.
There's usually a murderous clown attached to the other end of these.
Thank you, old boy. Lead the way.
Make you happy.
So different.
Pugsley, don't drink at all. This gentleman wants some too. What a nervous man. Welcome to the neighborhood. What an interesting home.
Fire in the hole!
You sunk my battleship!
Yes! These people are monsters! They'll ruin the neighborhood!
Hey, neighbor! What'd I do?
Deep down, we're all the same.
Let's show them what it means to be an Addams.
This is gonna be lit.
Choke on this!
I've got candy.
Oh, yes!
Yuck. I've done this thousands of times. Totally awesome.
Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot. Drop it like it's hot.
Got the rodeo on and I'm pouring Sean down because I got it going on.
Gossin, you made it.
Huh. Mm. I'm on the fence with that.
I think it's a good property, like Chris said,
To make a kids movie.
Animate. I think that the two Addams Family live action movies that came out in the early 90s, I think they're very underrated as comedies, but I would not attempt to remake something like that.
No.
Mm-hmm. I just think animation's the route to go.
I think I would have to, it's been so long since the live action ones came out, I'd have to see it. I was such a fan of watching this series, and of course I was watching it in reruns as a kid. Mm-hmm. But
what came first, Munsters or Addams Family?
It's a great question.
Because clearly one Aaron, was greenlit after the other one.
What, which came first, Addams or
what not? Came first in my heart was Addams Family, or like my viewing habits. Because when I was a kid, I saw Addams Family, then heard about the Munsters. I am gonna take.
I think Addams
guess.
Family came first.
I'm gonna say. Okay. I'm gonna say the Munsters came first.
Really?
Oh, I'm going to guess the Munsters.
The Munsters feels like just a copycat. Like, the Addams Family was really smart and well-written.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then they went, all right, we need a version, so just let's
You're probably right. I just wanted to be the contrarian.
Yeah. Same year.
1964 for both.
It's a push.
Okay. Oh, wow. It is a push.
64. The so, Beatles, the Addams Family, and the Munsters.
Wow. So there was a lot of angry phone calls going back and forth between development execs at studios at that point. I'm like, you can't greenlit the show. Oh, I already greenlit it. What are you going to do about it? We're going to greenlit our show then. Right. Yeah, we'll see who does better. There's only room for one creepy family show on TV. I'm like, no, actually,
no,
they both
is,
did all right.
Actually, there's room. There's plenty
we got
of room.
Robert Blake and Fred Gwynn.
Yeah.
Take that.
right.
But check out those Addams. If you have not seen the Addams Family live action ones in a minute, they really are funny.
It makes me want to go back to the original.
They're funny.
All right.
And on DVD and Blu-ray, just one big release, Avengers Endgame. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, you've already seen this movie. But if you want to own it, you could get it on Blu-ray. However, interestingly enough, streaming, there will be only one place you'll be able to stream this film.
The Disney Plus.
And that's it. And, you know, as you can, if you are watching any of the other streaming services, you're seeing the Disney properties slowly but surely start to leave all of these other platforms, including most likely the ABC stuff will start to go, and it's all going to be on this one platform. In fact, Disney Plus is so going after Netflix and other streaming services, they pretty much said, look, you know, you may not have kids, but there's still a lot of stuff you're going to want to see in Disney. Why don't we do this? We'll add Disney, ESPN, and Hulu all into one package. So you can pay one price and you'll get those three services together.
Yeah, the ESPN Plus was the was the thing that I'm like, ah, you might have got me with that. Yeah. I am a huge Star Wars fan, as you boys know. And so them announcing The Mandalorian, I was like, yeah.
It looks good. And Jon Favreau's doing it.
You also have a Cassian Andor, who was Diego Luna's character from Rogue One, has a spinoff series coming to there. And there's a third one that is in the Star Wars universe that has yet to be announced. That I have a feeling I am going to be lucky enough to be on hand at D23, Disney's convention, in a couple weeks when they make a lot of announcements and they show a lot of footage that the rest of the world has got to see for another couple months. I think they'll probably announce one of their other streaming shows and probably a Star Wars show, in addition to hopefully showing us some new Rise of Skywalker footage there.
Right.
So. I'm telling you, that's smart because...
It's genius.
Hulu, ESPN, or Disney on their own? Nope.
Yeah, but if you put them all together...
I do watch sports. I do like the Star Wars world, and I see what Hulu has to do.
And, you know, and you're also getting, like, some original Marvel content, too, along with some original Star Wars content. And you're getting the entire library of Disney movies. So.
Right. There's a Loki spinoff show that Tom Hiddleston is playing Loki. There's, I believe...
I tell you what, I would cancel my Netflix and get that.
Yeah. Well, now Netflix, the onus is on them to start making... Like show us what original... properties you can come up with, which they've done. You know, Stranger Things is good, but
well, that's why they bought Millar World. They bought all of Mark Millar's properties, and
right?
Because they realized they saw the writing on the wall that Disney was going to start their own. They're like, well, we need to start generating our own superhero properties.
And they have The Irishman coming out with Scorsese,
Umbrella Academy. They're making the push.
Yeah,
they have to.
Yes, they have to.
Because there's going to be a lot of people like myself that are going to just go, I'm not buying for both.
Yeah, do I really need all of this?
No, because if you got Hulu, then that covers all my episodic and movies and all that other stuff. And Disney covers all their properties. And now I'm getting sports on top of it.
Right.
Bye.
Whatever you can do to get me live sports that are streaming, that's what's really going to get me to cut the cable cord. Because I'm such an NFL fan that I still have DirecTV. Because they have the package, the Sunday package. So as soon as that evolves fully into something else, then that's probably what I'll end up doing, and then cutting the cable cord. So
yeah, I cut it several years ago when I kind of stopped being as big of an NFL fan. That was the one thing that was sort of holding me. And then, so now I just...
You seem happier.
I am. I'm so relaxed. Here's what I did.
You're quicker to smile. You have a song in your heart.
A lot of people are cord cutting for sure.
It's and I tell you what. So what I did, I still love baseball. So I got I get the Cubs every year through Major League Baseball, and I can watch the Cubs on my phone or whenever I want. Aaron,
you all right over there?
Aaron, it's okay. Aaron has
a Cardinals guys.
Yes, exactly. That's right. We call that a brain abnormality. I'm a Cardinals fan. It's not. You don't judge him. I let him make his weird noises.
He's on medication.
Yeah.
I can count to 11. Yeah.
All right, we're going to play this game. When was the last time you won one? Anyway.
I'm an Orioles fan, all right? As long as if we can stop losing 23-2 to the Astros, that would be fantastic for me.
Just stop giving up all those touchdowns. but anyway, so that's how I consume my sports now. And I have an Apple TV, so I get the ESPN app, so I get their free stuff.
Right.
Which is enough for me. Like, and
but
then
Plus gives you more content.
Plus
right?
gives you more. Well, Plus does a lot of things, like on their ESPN2 and their like it's stuff like that. So I watch the MLS a little bit, and ESPN Plus covers more MLS games and bonus content, and they started to put their 30 for 30s on ESPN.
That's what got me initially on Plus, was all the 30 for 30s are on there, and like I can fall into an OJ rabbit hole now whenever I want. It's a good feeling to have.
Yeah, so the 30 for 30s, that's a really good sports documentary series, and so I would do ESPN. And now if ESPN Plus then gives me everything, every other sport that they cover that I can't see all the time, like college basketball and MLS and whatever they are, that's a done deal. When are they coming out with this?
Streaming service is set to debut September. Later this year in the fall, because they not only The Mandalorian is, I believe, debuting in November, but they also have a bunch of original Disney live-action films that are going to be straight to the Plus service, like Lady and the Tramp.
Mm-hmm. It's going to launch with Endgame. That's one of their, like, as soon as you buy it that day, that's when it'll be available there on streaming. So. Oh, sorry. Yeah, November 12th.
And it'll
12th.
Have this bundle come November 12th?
Mm-hmm. It's one of the options. You can just get Disney Plus for the Disney stream if you just want that, but they have this bundle that they offered that, you know, caught our eye because of the other options.
November.
Yeah, and it's weird how that Fox merger with Disney suddenly gave them control of Hulu so they could make this offer. They're playing the long game, Graham.
Yeah, they
Disney are.
Are. They Disney smart.
Really
are.
Yeah.
It's very smart. Mm-hmm. All right.
So, all right, and the site spotlight, we want to mention everything on the store is now for sale. You know, we will be shutting down the store soon because a lot of things are going digital and not a lot of demand for physical copies of things anymore, especially T-shirts and books and DVDs. So everything's on sale. You don't need a coupon code, but we are liquidating. And we do have enough, though, for some loot crates if you still want to do the loot crate here on Patreon. But if you want some individual CDs, DVDs, a lot of Doug Benson stuff, I think there might be...
And the Doug Benson stuff, is most of it's autographed.
Yeah, most of the stuff in the store is signed for sure. And, you know, of course, you can get earbuds and the Comedy Film Nerd's Guide to Movies. But we'll say this, like, even though the store is going away, everything that Graham and I do will still exist in other forms. A lot of it is on Amazon. A lot of it is digital, especially, you know, earbuds, Graham CDs, my books. Everything is still going to be around.
Yeah.
We just won't have physical copies in the store anymore.
Yeah, so, it's just a big, because everything's gone digital. So like the wholesale cost, the manufacturing of them, there's not enough demand.
And the drop in sales.
So it just doesn't make sense for us anymore. So that's why we're liquidating a lot of stuff.
Yep. So we want to appreciate you guys that have been shopping in there for years. Really, really appreciate it. And so check out, enjoy the fire sale. There's definitely stuff left. And like I said, it's all discounted. So
I will be buying everything in the store and then selling it outside for a severe price hike.
Good for you.
Perfect. We hope every fan does that.
Do that. If you guys want us, I don't care.
Yeah.
I went to an LAFC soccer game Sunday, and I was going to buy a jersey from a guy selling it out of his...
Yeah,
that's
like
me.
He had a duffel bag.
Yeah.
I'm selling peanuts, $2 cheaper than inside.
That's what I'm talking about.
And you may not get to choose the size, but who cares?
Yeah, so what?
It's a duffel bag shirt. Why are you complaining?
An LA Podfest 5X? Mark will be selling them outside of a movie theater.
That'll be my tent. It's just a big
Yeah, and Graham wasn't kidding. We do have some of those.
We do have. Yeah. If anyone has a 5X or like a, if you need that.
Yeah, let us know.
Let us know. We have them. We have a shirt for you.
Yes.
If you're like, they don't make shirts in my size. We have them.
We have a few, yeah.
They're in Chris's garage.
Yep. I think we even have some 4X earbuds shirts.
We have 4X earbuds. We have Podfest in the 4 and 5X range.
Mm-hmm.
We have a bunch of girly smalls.
Yes.
Like if you're a petite woman.
Yeah.
You really.
Yep. There's plenty of those. And I think there's a bunch of girly Whistling Bane shirts left.
There's girly Whistling Bane shirts. Just for the love of God, buy them.
Yes. Yes.
And then sell them to Mark Ellis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I believe one of those 5X shirts, Chris and his family huddled in after seeing scary stories.
Yes.
Come on, family, under my shirt.
We used it as a cloth panic room.
Oh, God. Well,
so, you know, my daughter sees so many horror movies, too, now, and the R-rated ones, and she looked at me like, that was terrifying. Like, it was PG-13. Yeah. She even said, there's no way that should have been PG-13.
It really is a good way to grow up, though, is kids watching horror movies. It's some of my fondest memories are being scared for the very first time seeing a classic horror, a new horror movie, or something that's not so classic. You know,
And it's also, there is some, almost like a rite of passage to see a horror movie that you're not quite ready for yet.
Right. Saw Pet Sematary in the theater when I was 8 years old.
Yeah, not appropriate.
Oh, I saw so many movies like that way too young. Yeah. I saw Amityville Horror. I saw The Fog when I was like, who brought... But my parents brought me to Dachau when I was six, so they didn't really have a bar set. Yeah.
Even Doug, when he did the foreword for our book, he said, like, I think his parents took him to see this Argento movie, like... Bird with the Crystal Plumage, was that the one?
Something like that.
Well, like some horrifying movie. Yeah. Like he said, there was no way I should have seen this movie. So, all right, and premiering this week, The Angry Birds Movie 2.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you have kids, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry for you.
You may have to see this movie.
We apologize for having to mention it.
Yes, if either of my kids want to see this movie, they're going to get grounded. So that's
the only movie theater where you can take your cell phone out because you're just supporting the film.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not being a dick. I'm just supporting the birds.
This is what I'm doing.
This is AR. Mm-hmm. So I actually saw the first Angry Birds movie. It was horrible. So there is no reason why this should have ever been made.
This is none of this should be happening.
Rovio has enough money.
Yeah, you know, we don't need.
Yeah, everyone's got the app. We got it. Okay.
Every time we have to mention these on this show, I feel bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel dirty. I feel like I've done something wrong.
I feel
wrong.
Like I need to give you direct instructions. Everyone listening right now, don't go see this movie.
Yeah, don't direct instructions. Write this down. Don't see this.
Good Boys, as we talked about the trailer. 47 Meters Down, Uncaged. I've seen it, for whatever reason, they are pushing the shit out of this movie. Every time I've seen a movie, this trailer is playing in front of it. And
got a big billboard in Hollywood.
Yeah. I'm like, Jesus.
Did they like go? Was their release date pushed? They were supposed to be released before Megalodon, and then they're like, "Damn it!"
Yeah, I hope
that did well. That's not. So they're really because it's like
I love the reverence you have for the Meg. Yeah, you're willing to call it by the full
animal full name. That movie is a masterpiece.
This and is my please. Megalodon's my father's name. Yeah. Call me Meg.
Yeah.
Mr. Megalodon?
It's hard to get me to not want to go see any shark movie, though.
Of course.
You know, 47 Meters Down, I would have loved to have been on that original pitch meeting. I'm like, all right, hear me out. Trilogy.
Yes.
I'm telling you, we're going to go 48 and then 49 meters down.
Okay.
We're going to keep going.
Sold.
The next one is Blinded by the Light. This is the... movie that's based on Bruce Springsteen's music about, I think it's a kid in the UK.
It's made by the director that did Bend It Like Beckham.
Yes.
The trailer on this looks awesome.
It looks fun.
It looks like it's a combination of like Bend It Like Beckham and Yesterday.
Yeah. Is this like the new thing now where it's like people discover music, the music either disappears or they're not supposed to discover it, or like there's this weird thing where someone discovers a catalog of someone's music and then the movie's built around them?
Yeah.
I'm
all for it.
I'll do it. And, eventually they're going to make the Eddie Money movie that should be starring me.
Eddie Money.
Two Tickets to Paradise and One Boy Has a Dream of...
The Mark Ellis story.
Yeah.
Two Tickets to Paradise.
You'll be shaking in the theater.
The Eddie Money. So anything having to do any Van Halen literature or an Eddie Money docuseries?
Any Van Halen literature, but like because people they know what a Van Halen nut I am, and so like when the Motley Crue movie came out on Netflix, everybody's like, "Oh, Ellis, you probably really want to see Van," and I'm like, "I don't. I don't think that you're gonna do it. It needs to be done right, and I just don't see anybody doing that. I see them milking the melodrama for all it's worth, and the casting is impossible to do, and it's just like I'd rather enjoy the music, what I already have, and read up on the history of it, but I don't need to see it visually in front of me. Very precious about it.
Well, nobody's ever...
Unless you want to make a movie about Van Halen 3. You can make a movie about the Gary Cherone now. That's fine with me. Anything else is untouchable.
So... Well, maybe they'll make a movie about Sammy Hagar buying a series of bars. So that'll be great.
Or Eddie Van Halen, or David Lee Roth becoming a samurai. God, yeah, they all went a little shit nuts in the later years. Yeah. Good for them.
That's the life, man.
Just nuts.
You've been touring in the world's greatest rock band for decades. You got to move to Japan and take karate lessons.
Yep. Maybe just a movie about the last year. Something like that. Yeah.
This is sort of a recap. Mm-hmm. 2017 to today.
Yeah.
Our story starts in 2017. Yeah. What? Yeah. What are you talking about?
You know what happened leading up to this. You got all the albums. Just really hear me out.
You really need to know how Hot for Teacher got made, really?
Come on.
No, we're done. Where'd You Go, Bernadette? This is the Cate Blanchett movie. This one looks really good. Like a nice little, another like really cool like character piece that's like good counter programming from all the big things exploding and like you said, all the superhero movies. So, but again, this is another movie getting very little promotion or press, but it looks good. It looks like a cool. Now, did you see it yet?
I have not seen it yet. Mm. I know that there is less sharks in this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Than 47 Meters Down.
Probably.
Although Bernadette is uncaged through the film.
Bernadette uncaged.
Yeah, I believe so. Unless where she went is prison. Yeah. I don't know much about the film. So.
Or maybe she went on a Van Halen sabbatical.
It's based on the music of Backman Turner Over.
So Bernadette is taking care of business, if I'm not mistaken.
Man.
One day Bernadette wakes up, all the music of Bachman Turner Overdrive doesn't exist, and nobody cares.
Nobody knew. Nobody was like, you could ask that today. Yeah. People would be like, who are they? Or like, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Story of Bachman Turner. If you liked yesterday, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Baby, Bernadette ain't seen nothing yet. Oh, God.
Any listener under 40 is like, what the hell?
Shut up, old man.
Oh, my God. Don't make me Google.
Oh, God. Oh, my dad and his buddies are talking about old music.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's not like you could make it musically to it.
Oh, God. Sorry. Don't make me start talking about Foghat. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, that is our show, ladies and gentlemen.
Put it to bed.
Yeah.
This episode, 47 Meters Down. So,
Mark Ellis, where can people find you online or on perhaps
you're
offline?
You're doing a lot of stand-up. Mm-hmm. What's going down?
Yeah. You can find me offline at, grandma intro, Chris, the clubs and colleges across the country. I'm in New York in a couple weeks at New York Comedy Club, amongst many other spots I'll be popping into. But New York Comedy Club is the big headlining show Friday, August 30th. You can get tickets at markellislive.com and got a special that's going to be coming out real soon. So on that very soon. On all the social media stuff, it's just at Mark Ellis Live.
Check him out. We've done many shows together. Mark, very funny man, and obviously very knowledgeable about Van Halen and movies.
In that order. It is always good to see you, gents. Yep. Let's do it again before Graham and I bump into each other on stage.
Next Comic-Con. Hey, you're on the show?
Wait, don't you have another 10 months for that to happen?
We got 10 months. Yeah. I'll see you in 10 months, pal.
We'll set something up.
We'll see you in San Diego in 10 months.
Hey, it's you. What's your name again?
Hey.
That guy.
Well, I know one place you could is December 12th. We're doing our 600th episode at the Dynasty Typewriter.
Yes,
so
that's great.
It's going to be anyone who's ever been on the show, come in, just pop in for 5 minutes, say hey, talk about what movies. So
you know what? I'll do 4 minutes. I can't fill a whole 5 minutes.
Good. That's good. I didn't want to tell you only do 4, but I was giving me. I'm glad you
do it. Light me at 3. I'll be out of there in no time.
So yeah, and we
December 12th.
December 12th, and that ticket link will be up probably in the next couple weeks.
Yep.
When it is, we'll announce that. And also, I'm going to be speaking at the Minds event. This is like this political thing. August 31st. It's in Pittman, New Jersey, right outside of Philly. If you use coupon code GRAHAM, you get 10% off. Just over the bridge. I'm doing the Progressive Comedy Tour with Ron Placone. September 4th, we're in Omaha. The 5th, Sioux Falls. The 6th, Madison. The 7th, Minneapolis. And the 8th, Iowa City. Check that out. And then I'm going to be doing shows in Moscow and St. Petersburg. I'll have ticket links on those soon. Anybody out there in Russia? And then Progressive Comedy Tour is coming to Australia. We are doing November 14th, Melbourne. The 15th, Adelaide. The 17th, Sydney, which Alice Fraser will be on that show. And the 22nd in Perth. So again, go to grahamelwood.com for all your tour dates.
Very cool. And Long Ago and Far Away, my graphic novel, is available at the store. The Comedy Film Nerd store is signed, but it is also, if you want digital, it's on Comixology from Starburns Press. And we'll be doing a another Kickstarter for the next project, Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master, very soon. So we will keep you posted on that as well. So thanks again. That is our show, episode 477.
Put it in the books. Thank you again, Mark Ellis, for being on the show. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first.